Today, let's talk financial advising, retirement and tax strategy. Where do you put your money? The good, the bad, and the ugly. Because today will help you build your legacy with the fire on the wall.
Welcome back to Fly on the Wall Finance, where you get front row access to honest conversations and smart strategies about your money. I am your co-host, Tony Shore. And as always, I'm joined by the brains of the operation, our host with the most, the woman with the plan, Jamie Malm. Jamie, are we going to break down today one of the most underestimated tools in retirement, yet it seems to be one of the most talked about?
Ah, yes, absolutely. We are going to talk about Social Security. So if you're thinking, oh, Social Security, I've got that covered, I would say think again. Most people do not realize all the different ways in which you can plan utilizing Social Security. There are literally hundreds of ways that you can file, which sounds crazy. And choosing the wrong one, when you break down the numbers, I have seen this cost people hundreds of thousands of dollars. Wow. Over their lifespan of retirement, which is just nuts to think about.
Hundreds of thousands of dollars. That's a lot of records. That's real money, even to you and I.
That's right. That's right. That might buy you a few years of groceries in today's dollars. So,
or a beach house. Holy cow.
Yeah. One of the two. But whatever we're trying to accomplish, getting Social Security right is such an important component of your overall income plan. This is what lays the foundation for a successful income plan, and not just for you, but for your surviving spouse, which is something that we really want to dig into as it pertains to Social Security.
Well, and so really, Social Security, you've always said, Jamie, that it's the foundation of any solid retirement income plan. It's kind of where you begin because it's a known, somewhat known quantity, but there are ways to maximize it, like you say. So it's like a financial seatbelt for retirement, isn't it?
There you go. Yes, like a financial seatbelt. So let's talk first about some of the things that I hear about Social Security, which is, I don't know, is it even going to be there? And I would say, obviously, I don't have a crystal ball, but for anybody that is currently working, going to be retiring in the next 20 years, I don't have any major concerns, nor do I hear any from any legitimate sources that there are major concerns that Social Security will not be there. Will it be there for my grandkids? I have no clue. But for those of us that have been paying in, this is not just, it might be there, something that I have to pay into now and maybe I'll see it. This is one of the few income sources that is going to guarantee an income stream as long as you're alive, no matter how long that is. So exactly like a financial seatbelt.
Right.
But the timing is what really impacts everything.
Right. And before you jump into that, though, Jamie, I want to address the Social Security isn't going to be there. You do hear that a lot. People are like, well, it's not going to be there for me anyway. I can't count on it. But for most of the people listening, it will be there. As long as there are people working in this country, it's getting paid into, and they will eventually shore up Social Security. We've been to this point before, but I think what's causing that problem, Jamie, is the news media, and you hear doom and gloom. I mean, listen to this, the gravitas in this voice.
Here's another truth. Social Security is dying.
When I heard that, I'm like, that's why people say that, right? You can't. They get some voiceover guy with gravitas.
Yeah. You get the right voiceover guy and it's going to be law. So, yeah, I don't disagree.
Okay. But the timing, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, that's perfect. Okay. So let's assume Social Security is going to be there unless voiceover guy convinces us otherwise.
Right.
The timing is what really impacts everything. And I get the temptation here. We start to near the end of our working years and we start thinking, I could be out of here. You know, I want to retire early. That's an income source. I don't have to come up with as much out of pocket. But if I take it early, which the earliest you can take Social Security is 62, if I file for that benefit early, I am locking in a lower benefit than for the rest of my life. It's about a 30% decrease over what my benefit would be if I would wait till full retirement age. And full retirement age for most of us right now is 67. So if I wait until 67, that's where, like, if you're getting online to look at your benefit, or if you happen to be one that still gets those in the mail, when you see your full retirement benefit, that's what we're talking about. Typically age 67, that's when you've reached the full benefit. But if you wait, it grows at an 8% increase per year all the way to 70. That's sometimes hard to wait. It's hard to delay. We like instant gratification. We convince ourselves it's not going to be that much different. I want to go ahead and take it. And what if I don't have longevity on my side? And those things should be considered, of course. If you are somebody who says there's nobody in my family that's lived beyond 75, well, maybe you should take it early. There's none of us know, of course, but some intentional planning with what is your income gap, how much Social Security will create a foundation of that plan, that's going to be key.
Well, yeah, and these things can really add up fast. You have to take all this into consideration. I mean, people are living longer and longer. We're spending 20, 30 plus years in retirement, living well into their 80s and 90s, right?
Right. Yep. So longevity is key. Mm-hmm. Most of us are going to have longevity on our side, and we underestimate how many years we're actually going to spend in retirement. It's not like it used to be where we would retire at 65 and maybe people had 10 years in retirement they had to plan for. People now have 30, 35, 40 years that they may live in retirement where we have to self-fund that. And when you think of it in that kind of capacity, it's not so painful then to think about, well, maybe I don't want to wait until 67. I want to take it at 62. We've got to do some intentional planning and just do the math and see what actually benefits you the most. Because if we take it early, then you have to fill the income gap with withdrawals from like your IRA, or you've had a 401k rollover. And when I do that, there's this trickle down effect. If I have a lower Social Security payment, that means I have a bigger withdrawal I have to make from my own account. That creates potentially more taxes. It creates potentially an increase in my Social Security benefit being taxed. And there's this whole trickle-down effect that happens from there then. Mm-hmm. The Medicare premiums that I pay are going to be impacted. How long my IRA account will last, like you said, is impacted. So we've got to plan for the long haul, not just the early retirement honeymoon phase.
Yeah. Good point. And, you know, that makes me think, let's talk more about that, the income gap. And I think that's the part that scares a lot of people, where people realize too late that their retirement savings might not stretch as far as they thought. I heard a phrase, I love this one. You don't want your bank account to hit zero before your blood pressure does, right?
Right. That is what we don't want to have happen. Right. And I see also there's really two sides of this coin. There are the people that are very fearful that they're not going to have enough money to last as long as they do. Sure. And then there are the people that are not fearful at all. And they find themselves surprised when, oh gosh, I didn't think that this was going to be an issue for me. Now what? And what a devastating scenario to find yourself in if you are now elderly and, you know, 85, 90, 95, and we don't have planned for the income that you need to take care of yourself. We don't want that scenario. So let's think about if, let's just assume we have a couple that needs $75,000 to live on. If they both file at 62, let's say their combined benefits a little bit decreased, worth about 30% off what they could normally get, and their benefits only $37,000. That means they have to come up with $38,000 of their own money for as long, every year, for as long as they live to hit that $75,000. If we think about it, then on the flip side, what if they would have waited? Let's say he files at 70, she files at 68. Now their benefit's 62,000. They only need to come up with 13,000 out of their investments. Over 30 years, that can mean almost $200,000 stays invested, compounds, grows for you. It may be a smarter strategy to pull a bigger amount from your IRA for a few years to bridge that gap, then, and then drastically decrease it, then this big amount all years, year after year, year after year, that really plays a big impact on longevity.
Yeah. Yeah. And longevity is a big part of this, which is makes Social Security maximization all that more important, right?
Yeah, it does. So we want to maximize the benefit, minimize what we have to take from our own accounts. And we also have to think about market downturns. If we have a dip in the markets and we have a big amount that we're relying upon our investments or IRAs or 401k rollover, whatever our assets are, if we have to pull when the markets are down, we start digging ourselves a hole that's really, really difficult to dig our way out of. Right. But if Social Security is covering a higher amount of our income, then we can kind of ride out those waves without panicking. So that's one of the benefits of a higher Social Security amount, less income that we need to fill the income gap. We don't run into scenarios where, well, now I don't have a choice. The markets are down, but I have to have this money to live on. So I don't want to, but now I've got to pull it out.
Hmm. So it sounds like there are a lot of arguments to maybe waiting to file, not necessarily locking in a lower amount with Social Security, but make sure you find ways to maximize it before you file. Is that what you're saying?
Right. We need to do the math to say, look, just because it may not, maybe you say at 62, I'm out of here. I am not working to 67. I am not working to 70. It doesn't mean that we can't still provide the income that you need, but let's figure out a different way possibly to give you a better scenario in the long run than just let me file as soon as it's available to me and then let me figure out the rest. And then that puts you, it locks you in to a situation where I have to figure out how to complete a bigger income gap for the rest of my life. Whereas I maybe have been better off just to figure out how to complete a big income gap for 5 years. And then I could have scaled away back.
Yeah, there you go. I like that idea. And having a plan up front is key. But no matter what time, there's no time like the present to plan. It's like a tree. The best time to plant a tree, 20 years ago. The second best time, today.
Today,
right?
Yep, yep. Yeah. Sometimes it feels like, well, Social Security is so far in the future, that's too early for me to be thinking about. But we don't want to start thinking about Social Security right when it's time to potentially take it. Then right. It will be a little bit too late. I hate to say too late. It's never too late, but it's a little too late to change some of the planning I could have done beforehand to enhance the amounts that I have available to me. If I haven't done any planning before it's time to file, it just is what it is, right? Yeah. I'm kind of left with, well, I've got to work with what I have. Whereas if I do some planning beforehand, maybe I know, okay, here's an account that I really want to increase the value in. Let's say I'm going to diversify taxes, for example. If I know I want to retire early, and let's back it way up. Let's say I want to retire at like 55. If I want to retire at 55 and I have IRAs, I can't pull from those until I'm 59 and a half without a penalty. I better have some Roth money or some non-qualified funds or something that's going to bridge a five-year gap for me until I can start tapping into those. And then I better have some funds that are available to me from 60 to maybe 67 that's going to bridge the gap until Social Security. So you've got to think of, when do I want to retire? What will be available to me then? And how should I plan accordingly? You're going to be much happier with your income plan if you do that earlier rather than later.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's huge. So where do you want to go with this conversation next? I mean, we've been talking about Social Security. You talked about sequence of returns risk, you know, pulling money out of the market when it's down is bad. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's another reason to maximize your Social Security. What do you have for us next?
Well, let's dig into sequence of returns a little bit, because I touched on it, but I didn't fully explain really what that means. And okay. This can be confusing, I think, to some of us that really haven't thought about the difference in the accumulation phase of my financial life and the distribution phase. So when I'm accumulating assets, you'll hear of a lot of advisors say, well, let's just assume you average 6%. If I'm averaging 6%, let's say over 20 years, it doesn't matter the order in which I get those returns. It doesn't matter if I have losses early, losses late, as long as it averages 6% at the end, the dollar amount that I have is going to be the exact same, regardless of how you try to flip-flop around my returns. In distribution phase, totally different, whole new ball game. So let's say I have $1 million and I want to take $50,000 a year for income. Mm-hmm. I want to increase it, give myself a little pay raise, 3% per year. Let's look at two scenarios. First scenario, I'm pulling out $50,000 a year, but I have the first 3 years of retirement, the market has losses. After those first 3 years, I'm okay. You know, I'm averaging 6%. In fact, I go to year 18, I go 15 more years and I've averaged 6% over the long haul, but my money's gone. How happy are you going to be with me as your advisor if I say, well, I don't know what to tell you. You averaged 6%. I'm sorry that your money didn't last. That was sequence of returns risk. Let's do another scenario. Same scenario, same million, same 50,000 that I want to pull out, same average return. But instead of having the first 3 years of retirement that had losses, it was my last 3 years of retirement. Not only am I not out of money in year 18, I still have $824,000 of my million left. The big difference is I didn't dig myself a hole. Markets down, I took 50,000. Markets down, I took 50,000. Markets down, I took 50,000. In that first scenario, I just dug myself such a deep hole, I could not ever rebound. So yes, I averaged 6%, but I ran myself out of money. Second scenario, I didn't have those early losses. So by the time those losses hit, I still, both scenarios averaged 6%. But I would venture to say that having $820,000 left of your million and being able to continue your income plan is a lot more preferable to I'm out of money in year 18 and now I don't know what to do. That sequence of returns risk.
That's huge. So, I mean, risk is a big part of this and people need to understand how much that can affect them. And so I'm sure our listeners, Jamie, are saying, well, what's the solution then? And it is having a plan in place. So if the market has a year like 2022 or 2008, where it's down like that, you don't have to be pulling the same amount all out of the market all at once. And that's the problem of just going into retirement with all your money in an IRA or the 401k and not doing any planning. So that's good. What's next? Let's talk a little bit more about risk. I saw, you know, you've talked before about the color of money, and I saw something in your workbook about that. What is that?
We talk about risk like a stoplight, red money, green money, yellow money. When you see a stoplight and you see red, what do you think?
Stop.
Stop. danger, right? We think stop.
Yep.
So red money is money that's at risk. In retirement, when we're reliant upon it, we don't necessarily want to be pulling income from money that's at risk. That's our growth money. That is the money that I hope it's there in the future, but I'm not reliant upon it. It is not money that I have to make sure is there because I've got to pull income from it. So red money, think danger, stocks, mutual funds, things that can lose money. That's red money. When we're accumulating assets, fine. We have time to ride that out. When we're in the income stage, when we're thinking about how to maximize the income gap beyond Social Security, we don't want to be pulling from red money. Yellow money, then, what do you think when you see a stoplight that's yellow?
Speed up.
You're going to say that. Yes, exactly. Hurry, speed up.
No, slow down.
Slow down, caution, yeah, right? Caution. So yeah. Yellow money is money that could still have losses, but maybe it's got a buffer on it against losses. Maybe it's actively managed. Somebody is paying attention to that to say, hey, we proceed with caution here, but we're kind of middle of the road. We're not just dumped into something that is just going to fluctuate with whatever happens. Green money then, safe, predictable. Green means go. This isn't super exciting, but things like Social Security, annuities, bank accounts, CDs, money market funds, they're safe. They're predictable.
Pensions, probably.
Pensions. Yeah. We know exactly what they're going to be providing.
Sure.
So the first thing that we have to think about is, what's your color of money risk tolerance? Think of it like a pie chart. How much of your pie can we afford to have red and yellow, where we're focused on growth? And how much should we have green? The green money is where we're going to pull our income so that we don't find ourselves in this scenario of sequence of returns risk.
Oh, that's a great way to plan and to look at it. So really it's about balance then, correct?
For sure. All about balance, what's correct for you, and making sure that you have some transparency around that. If you don't understand why we're doing something, then it probably doesn't sound super important, right? So you've got to have an understanding of why this makes sense for your scenario.
Sure. Sure. That makes great sense. And you have a lot of tools. That's why you run color of money risk analysis. That's why you have the generational vault. I think that's really good. So people can track this in real time, right?
Yeah, the vault is such a huge tool for people because it helps you organize your financial life. So with one picture, one login, you can see everything about your income plan, your assets, your returns, your just have a one snapshot of what exactly is our plan here and feel really organized and confident in that plan. So I love Generational Vault for that aspect. Yeah.
That's really good. It's a great tool, and you offer it to your clients and people you work with at no charge. There's no charge, no obligation for that. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Now, two aspects of Social Security that we haven't talked about that I wanted to ask you about, and that's taxes and spousal benefits.
Big ones. Taxes is probably a sore subject with most people as it relates to Social Security, because we can't believe, you know, this is money that I already paid taxes on and paid into it, and now I'm going to be taxed on the benefit. So there are breakpoints, right, of how much your Social Security can be taxed, which is determined by what's called your provisional income. Things like IRA withdrawals increase your income, which increases the amount of your Social Security taxation, all the way up to 85% of your benefit being taxed. We can control that, which is why we build tax efficient plans. It's why we want to have buckets of money that we can pull from, because we don't, you know, we can't always control if we pay taxes, but we can control when we pay them. And that can make all the difference in the money that's left in your pocket.
Right. A lot of people do believe they don't understand that Social Security can be taxed, and up to 85% of it can be taxed. And not only on a federal level, some states, not all, but there are some states out there that also tax Social Security.
Yep. So if we can keep income sources That don't impact your provisional income, then that's a way to lower taxation on Social Security. So when we put together an income plan, we're looking at all of that, because the higher your income is, the more Social Security benefits are being taxed, the higher your Medicare premiums are. So it all works together, and we have to really be planning accordingly. You asked about spousal benefits.
Yeah, the surviving spouse. I think that's something a lot of couples overlook.
Yeah, it's the loopholes surrounding spousal benefits have greatly changed over the last few years. We used to have things like file and suspend and restricted applications, and there was all these ways in which you could generate more benefits and then switch to another benefit. Those have been closed. I would say the last, I'm trying to think now, 6 years, maybe 7 years. I think it was around 2019, but also, when somebody asks me how long it's been, I'll say maybe 3 years and it's been 10. So time flies. But those loopholes have been closed.
Yeah.
What we do have to think about is the surviving spouse is going to keep the higher of the two benefits. So if both spouses have a benefit, maybe one's getting $3,000, one's getting $1,500, we've got total of $4,500 that they're used to getting. That $1,500 is going to drop off.
Yeah.
So now I have $3,000. Maybe that's okay, or maybe that's going to feel really painful because that is money that I'm used to living on, and I still have the same mortgage, and I still have the same car payment, and I still have the same property taxes. So if I have to replace the smaller of the two Social Security benefits that are going to be falling off, one of the things that we always look at is, well, what lump sum amount is going to be required to then go replace that monthly income stream? And if we need to be able to do that, we have to make sure that we have a lump sum amount available when that time comes to go replace the Social Security that's going to fall off.
Okay.
The other thing we get asked about is ex-spouses.
Divorce. I was going to ask, what happens if you've gotten divorced? Can you apply for your ex-spouse's benefit?
Yep. So the answer depends on your current scenario. You have to have been married at least 10 years. You have to be the person that's wanting to file. You have to be at least 62. You can't be remarried. And your ex-spouse that you are applying for benefits off of, he or she has to also be of qualifying age to apply for Social Security. They are not sharing benefits. It doesn't impact their benefit. You don't have to call them and ask them. It is something that is your benefit alone, not impacting theirs, not impacting their new spouse. But if you were married for at least 10 years, you're at least 62 and you're not remarried, you are eligible for up to half of their benefit. That's what a spousal benefit or an ex-spousal benefit is. And if your amount is higher, then there's no reason to, you don't get both, right? You don't get to take half of theirs and also yours. It's called deemed filing. And if you file, it means you're deemed to have filed for whatever the highest benefit available is to you. So if your own Social Security benefits are higher than half of your spouse's or half of your ex-spouse's, if you qualify, you automatically get the higher of the two. You don't get both.
Okay. So you don't get the ex-spouse benefit plus your own.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. So before we go, Jamie, what should our listeners be doing to make sure they're getting this right with their Social Security?
First thing that I would do is go on to ssa.gov. You can get your Social Security statement. So there'll be an account you have to create. They'll ask some questions to verify your identity, and then it will give you exactly what your benefit is at full retirement age. That's the key that we want to, that's the number we want to have. Because if we have, it's called a PIA amount, primary insurance amount. If we know what that amount is at your full retirement age, we can then run a Social Security maximization analysis to check all these hundreds of ways in which you can file. And we can give clear direction on, here's what you can expect if you do it at 62, at full retirement age, at 70. And then what is your optimized strategy. Looking at all these scenarios, the software and the analysis will actually say, here's your optimized strategy for you, for your spouse, for your survivor benefits. So if this is an area that you're wondering about, that is something that we provide to folks at no cost, just to give a benchmark idea of what you should start planning for.
All right. And so you should schedule that no charge, no obligation consultation. And what do people walk away with?
Yep. You're going to walk away with exactly the information you need to make some informed decisions. So like I just said, all the information on 62, 67, full retirement age and optimized, we're going to talk through, well, what does that really mean for you? Now that you have the foundation, what's the income gap that we think we're going to have to fill, and where can we best do that? So that's the information that you want sooner rather than later, so you have time to change your situation. And if there's something that looks like, gosh, I'm going to need some tax diversification if I want to retire early, I need a tax-free bucket to pull from, we've got time to build that up so you can.
All right. Well, Jamie, before we go, let our listeners and viewers out there know how they can get a hold of you to set up that no charge, no obligation consultation.
Sure. You can always call our office, 620-377-6456. You can go online to Iron Horse Financial Services and request a consultation there. We're on social media. So we're on Facebook, we're on Instagram. You can obviously message us, direct message us there if you want. But it's an easy thing to set up. It's, you know, can sound scary as I don't know what all I would need, but this is as simple as it gets to create a foundational type plan. So something I feel very passionate about, that everybody without fail should know how to maximize Social Security benefits.
All right. I think that's great. Listeners and viewers, that does it for today's episode of Fly on the Wall Finance with our host, Jamie Malm.
Thank you, everyone. See you next time. That wraps up another episode of the Fly on the Wall podcast. Join us next time as we continue the conversations and bringing you behind the scenes in the world of finance. And don't forget to stay connected with us on your favorite social media platforms and subscribe wherever you're listening to podcasts so you don't miss an episode. And we will see you next time.
All matters discussed during this show are for informational purposes only. Opinions expressed are solely those of Iron Horse Financial Services and staff. All topics covered are believed to be from reliable sources. However, Iron Horse Financial Services makes no representations as to its accuracy or completeness. This commercial shall in no way be construed as a solicitation to sell securities or advisory services to residents of any other state other than Kansas or otherwise permitted. Topics should be discussed with your financial advisor prior to implementation. Advisory services offered through Iron Horse Financial Services, a registered investment advisor in the state of Kansas. Insurance products and services are offered through Iron Horse Retirement, an affiliated company. Iron Horse Financial Services and Iron Horse Retirement are not affiliated with or endorsed by the Social Security Administration or any other government agency.